This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Let's welcome back Dr. John Laird from UC Davis, who will give us a follow-up talk on the use of atherectomy and where he believes it stands in current practice. John.
Well, thanks very much, Mike, and good morning, everyone. It's really a series of fantastic talks this morning and a great meeting so far. So my charge is to talk about atherectomy and kind of where we stand 12 years after FDA clearance of some of these devices. These are my disclosures, and I do consult and advise some of the companies that make and market these atherectomy platforms. So where do we stand? I think it could be summarized in these 5 points. There has been continued evolution and improvement of these devices, and we'll talk some about that this morning. I think there are a number of important niche applications for atherectomy devices, for heavily calcified lesions, thrombus-containing lesions, for the treatment of in-stent restenosis, and potentially for treatment in the quote-unquote non-stent zones where you want to avoid implantation of a permanent endoprosthesis. Despite the fact that these devices have been around for a long time, though, there's really very limited good quality data and very little comparative data with atherectomy platforms. There is excellent reimbursement in the U.S. for atherectomy, particularly in the outpatient setting, and that is driving a lot of usage with these systems, as we'll talk about. And there is the excitement and possibility of, or excitement associated with the possibility of atherectomy plus drug-coated balloons now that we are into the drug-coated balloon era. So as mentioned, there has been significant improvement in these devices over time. They're easier to use. I think they're more effective. The number of different platforms has been cut down, so it's a little less complicated than it used to be to choose an atherectomy device. And I think overall they work better. The four major platforms that I'm going to talk about this morning are the Jetstream atherectomy system, which is currently owned and marketed by Boston Scientific, the Diamondback Stealth orbital atherectomy system from CSI, and then the Hawk 1 atherectomy system from Covidien Medtronic, and then the excimer laser platform from Spectranetics. And they all have these types of slides that they use, which indicate where they think their device works best and where their opponent's or the competitor's device does not work as well. And depending upon which company's slide you use, you will see more checkbox under their device. And so I will let you guess which company's device or which company's slide this is. But I think it is important to note that each device has, I think, a particular niche in terms of where it works well. Some work well for calcified lesions. Some work well for softer thrombus-containing lesions. And we'll talk some about that. I probably have the most experience with excimer laser angioplasty, and I've been using that for a number of years and have been involved in some of the clinical trials. The peripheral laser atherectomy catheters were approved by the FDA for use in 2004. The 2.3 and 2.5 millimeter catheters. Original catheter was the extreme over-the-wire catheter. Since then, there have been iterative improvements in the catheter designs, optimally spaced, turbo, and now the turbo elite over-the-wire catheters, and then more recently, the turbo tandem platform, which we'll talk about. And the primary improvements over time have been increasing the number of laser fibers in the catheters to allow for more active area of ablation and better ability to debulk plaque, as shown here with this 1.7 millimeter turbo elite catheter. There's also now a 0.9 millimeter catheter, which can be used for distal vessel treatment and can be also used to treat occlusive disease in the pedal vessels. One of the limitations of the laser system over the years is that you are not able to create a channel larger or significantly larger than the diameter of the catheter. And so they developed this turbo tandem laser sheath where you can mount the laser catheter on the sheath and then perform a directional laser debulking, circumferentially debulking plaque, thereby creating a lumen larger than the diameter of the catheter itself. And this device was evaluated in the CELLO trial, which was the first kind of multi-center experience with this directional laser system. This is one of the patients that was treated in that trial, a relatively short segment occlusion of the distal SFA. The first step is to create a pilot channel with a 2-millimeter laser catheter, and we can see the angiographic outcome and then also the result by intravascular ultrasound with a channel that corresponds to the size of that 2-millimeter laser catheter. Then after multiple passes with the turbo tandem system, we can see both a better angiographic result, but proof of concept that you can debulk some more plaque with that directional laser system. And then with adjunctive balloon angioplasty, even better luminal enlargement, both by IVUS and by angiography. What is the clinical evidence behind excimer laser angioplasty? Well, there have been a number of multi-center trials, including two randomized trials, the peripheral excimer laser angioplasty trial, the PELLA trial, which randomized laser to balloon angioplasty for long SFA occlusions. And basically, the results, both in terms of procedural success and patency, were equivalent between the two techniques. There was no advantage for laser overall, although there was less stent usage and less distal embolization in the laser arm of the trial. There was the LACI trial, which was I was personally involved with, which was the laser angioplasty for critical limb ischemia trial, which is a multi-center registry of laser plus adjunctive therapies for patients with CLI. There was the CELLO trial, which was a multi-center registry looking at that turbo booster turbo tandem device that we talked about. And then most recently, the EXCITE ISR trial, which was a randomized trial of excimer laser compared to balloon angioplasty for femoral popliteal in-stent restenosis. I think the sweet spot or potential applications for excimer lasers for the use of this device for debulking of long occlusions and germane to today's discussions, I think it's helpful for long infrapopliteal occlusive disease. It's also, as we'll talk about, been shown to be effective for in-stent restenosis, and laser can debulk acute thrombus. So this would be a typical case where I would consider laser a patient with, you know, severe infrapopliteal occlusive disease, occlusion of all three of the infrapopliteal arteries, long occlusion of the anterior tibial artery, occlusion of the tibioperineal trunk and proximal perineal, and then a very severely diseased posterior tibial artery. In this case, both the anterior tibial artery and the perineal artery were debulked first with laser, and then adjunctive balloon dilatation was performed. And we get a nice, consistent angiographic result, and I think a better hemodynamic result in some cases with this approach. And as mentioned, we performed the LACI trial back in the early 2000 timeframe, which was a trial that enrolled 145 patients and 155 limbs, patients with critical limb ischemia, using laser and adjunctive therapies. In that trial, we had a limb salvage rate of 93%. The other areas mentioned that I think where laser can be helpful is for the treatment of in-stent restenosis, particularly in-stent occlusion. This was one of the patients that we treated in the EXCITE ISR trial, patient with diffuse restenosis within this SFA stent. Again, using the turbo tandem platform, we first make a pilot channel with a 2-millimeter catheter, shown here. And then this is the turbo tandem device being advanced through the stent. Multiple passes are made. And then with adjunctive balloon angioplasty, you get a nice angiographic result without sort of that shagginess that you sometimes see if you just do balloon angioplasty alone in these cases. The EXCITE trial, again, was a randomized trial of laser plus balloon angioplasty compared to balloon angioplasty alone in patients with femoral popliteal in-stent restenosis. And they did show better patency in the laser arm of this trial, shown here. The other area which I think that laser can really be very helpful for is for patients that have thrombus-containing lesions in the vessels. This is a patient who had had a previous Viabond stent graft implanted, which occluded. She was not a good candidate for thrombolytic therapy because of some history of GI bleeding. So elected to try and treat her without lytics and made a pass first with laser, was able to debulk that stent graft really quite well, placed a distal protection filter, and then performed balloon angioplasty alone, which was with a really nice and surprising angiographic result. Now, I don't normally use laser for thrombosed fem pop grafts or Vibans like this, but in some cases it can be extremely helpful. But for occluded stents with some thrombus or very diseased vessels where there's some thrombus within the lesion, it can be very helpful to reduce the risk of distal embolization. What about the CSI orbital atherectomy platform? There have also been significant enhancements in this device over the years with the Stealth 360-degree PAD system and the newer Diamondback 360-degree PAD system. These are really, it's a really nice and easy to use platform for cardiologists who have used rotational atherectomy with the rotablator over the years. This is really a significant improvement compared to rotablator. We can use this electric platform now, three speeds, low, medium, and high. A very, very nice platform. The crowns have been improved now. Tungsten, better crowns designs. We have the solid micro crown for treating distal vessels into the foot. The classic crown still is available for angulated vessels, and then the solid crown for the majority of the cases that we're doing. The clinical evidence supporting the use of this system is basically all registry data. The OASIS trial, which was a prospective multicenter registry, the CONFIRM 1 and CONFIRM 2 post-market registries, and then more recently the Calcium 360-degree post-market registry, so no comparative trials with this device. And the sweet spot here is for a very heavily calcified and or non-dilatable calcified lesions. So the patients that have this bulky, sort of exophytic, really gnarly-looking calcified lesion can be treated very readily with the orbital atherectomy system. In this case, we used a 2.25 millimeter crown, debulked that lesion, and then with balloon angioplasty, a nice angiographic result. And I find myself using the device more and more for patients with very heavily calcified infrapopliteal vessels, you know, the end-stage renal disease patients that we're treating very commonly, seen here, diffuse calcified disease in the distal posterior tibial artery, and the typical nice smooth angiographic result you get after debulking and low-pressure balloon angioplasty. So a very helpful platform for the extremely calcified vessels that we see commonly in daily practice. The third platform that we're going to talk about is the excisional or directional atherectomy system from Covidien Medtronic. There have been multiple iterations with this platform, the most recent being the Hawk 1 directional atherectomy system, which was recently released and designed to replace the smooth cutting and calcium cutting TurboHawk devices. So now we just have one device for multiple plaque morphologies. The enhancements here include increasing the rotational speed from 8,000 to 12,000 RPMs, a more robust drive shaft, modification of the blades to allow a more calcified plaque to be treated, a better crossing profile, and then a simplified mechanism for cleaning the plaque out of the nose cone of the catheter. The clinical evidence for SilverHawk, TurboHawk devices are basically registry data, the Talon registry, definitive LE study, which was a larger, better done, prospective multi-center registry with core lab follow-up and adjudication of data, and then the definitive calcium study and more recent definitive AR study, which was a small randomized trial comparing drug-coated balloon plus atherectomy versus drug-coated balloon alone. The sweet spot for this device, I think, is ostial lesions, potentially common femoral artery lesions. I know the surgeons in the audience are cringing as I say that. Eccentric bulky plaque, calcified lesions, and sometimes can be used effectively for in-stent restenosis, although this is not a part of the IFU. This is a patient of mine treated several years ago. He'd had a previous fem-pop graft that had failed and came in with ischemic rest pain and had really this very severe and complex common femoral artery lesion, which was debulked with a TurboHawk device with a nice angiographic and clinical outcome. so that not my case, but a patient with very calcified common femoral artery disease as well as calcified common femoral lesions treated with a TurboHawk calcium cutting device with, I think, surprisingly good angiographic result. And then a patient that I treated, a diabetic end-stage renal disease patient with diffuse disease of the superficial femoral artery. You can get really, really nice results debulking these with the SilverHawk, TurboHawk platform. Again, with a very clean and nice angiographic outcome without the kind of the dissections you might expect to see if you just perform balloon angioplasty alone. And for cases like this in the future, it'll be interesting to see whether the combination of atherectomy and drug-coated balloon could be helpful. And then the last platform is the Jetstream system, now marketed by Boston Scientific. Rotational atherectomy combined with aspiration at the same time, active aspiration to try and reduce the risk of embolization. There have been like 7 or 8 iterations of this platform over the years. The latest shown here, the XC catheters, the larger vessel catheters, and the SC smaller vessel catheters. This device can be rotated with blades up or blades down, depending upon which way it's rotated to increase the debulking that you achieve with this system. The small vessel system does not have the blades up capability, and is meant for the infrapopliteal vessels. The clinical studies supporting this device are, again, registry studies, the Pathway PVD study, which led to approval of the device, showing 74% target lesion revascularization-free rate at 12 months, and then some smaller calcium registry and post-market registry, which is ongoing. Overall, what's the quality of data supporting the use of atherectomy devices? Well, it's poor. It's really poor, and it's disappointing that that better studies haven't been done given how long these devices have been available on the market. Most of the and many of the devices were approved by the FDA using 510K pathway based on a predicate device and little data. And after all of these years, only 3 randomized trials have been done with these atherectomy systems. The Pella trial, which we talked about, laser atherectomy, the Excite SIR trial, laser atherectomy for in-stent restenosis, and then a definitive AR study, which is really a small pilot randomized trial looking at atherectomy plus a drug-coated balloon. This is a very interesting publication from Journal of the American College of Cardiology from March, looking at trends in settings for peripheral vascular intervention and the effect of changes in the outpatient prospective payment system on device use. And as we know, atherectomy is actually very well reimbursed in the outpatient setting. It's a slide I borrowed from TCTMD, but this highlights or summarizes that article, which looked at 39,339 Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries who underwent lower extremity revascularization between 2006 and 2011. And during that time period, the rate of interventions per 100,000 patients declined in the inpatient setting from 2009.7 to 151.6, which you would expect to result in a decrease in the overall costs associated with these procedures. It rose in the outpatient hospitals from 184 up to 228, and from and in office-based clinics from 6 to 37.8 during that time period. Use of atherectomy increased twofold in the outpatient hospital setting, but in those physician-owned office-based clinics, there was a 50-fold increase in the use of atherectomy over that time period. The mean costs of atherectomy, not surprisingly, were higher than the cost of angioplasty and stenting. And so all of that decrease in inpatient procedure usage and the what was expected to be a decrease in costs was offset by the increased costs of the atherectomy that was performed in the outpatient and office-based clinic setting. It's a little disappointing to think that given the limited data that's out there for atherectomy, that there's this much usage in the office-based practice, which is likely economically driven. What about combination therapy, the use of atherectomy plus drug-coated balloons? Well, I think it's a really exciting possibility. to be able to overcome the limitations of balloon angioplasty, of elastic recoil, and of dissection with an atherectomy device, get a better luminal gain and better angiographic result, and then deliver drug into the vessel wall to potentially freeze that result and result in overall better long-term outcomes. There have been a couple pilot studies that have been done, including the definitive AR study, which is a 100-patient study randomizing patients to directional atherectomy plus drug-coated balloon to drug-coated balloon alone, with a subset of patients with the heavily calcified lesions that were just treated with atherectomy plus drug-coated balloon. There was better acute success with atherectomy and drug-coated balloon, and in some subsets, there was a signal towards improved outcomes when you had the combined therapy for the longer lesions and in the calcified lesions. But in this small study, there was overall not significant differences in the overall outcomes between the two arms of the trial. So this remains an unanswered question, but an exciting possibility. So again, where do we stand now after all of these years of atherectomy devices being available? Well, we certainly have better devices, more easy to use and more effective devices. We have device-specific advantages for certain lesion subsets and more options for heavily calcified lesions. But as we talked about, these are expensive devices. There's limited good quality data, and unfortunately, usage does seem to be driven by the favorable reimbursement that's out there. Thank you very much. Go Giants.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.